bring them with me. The work I'm going to talk about was done in the University of Texas, where I did my postdoc. And my main collaborator is Benoit Roman, who's now in France, in Paris. Spencer Smith was a summer student who did some work on mapping leaves, which I will show at the end. Michael Marder did the numerical simulation, which I will show. And everything was done in the Center for Nonlinear Dynamics with Harry Sweeney. So I start not properly, because it is not about fracture and not about Laplacian growth or DLA, but I think it is relevant to this conference, listed from the program list. It is indeed true that complex systems can be the result of simple dynamics. In this case, it is statics, but still very simple. And it is relevant to biological systems as well. I will give some motivation why what I'm going to talk about and why it is interesting. Then I will describe the experiment and describe this, what we call this buckling cascade. I will make a claim about the origin of it, and then I will try to support it by numerical results. Then I will do as much as the time will allow me. I will go into discussion about the geometry and the real origin of the complexity coming out of nowhere. And at the end, I will show experiments on plants and gel sheets, which I see as a future development of this thing. So thin sheets are very, very common structure in nature and also in biological systems. And in many cases, they are wavy. Sometimes, like in this example, you take a flat sheet and try to wrap a curved object, and then it wrinkles, like a cloth and like this elephant, which his skin is highly, highly wrinkled. But sometimes you find free surfaces, free sheets, and they're also wavy. Very often, their edges are wavy, and sometimes not just with a single wavelength, but with more than one wavelength. And you can ask yourself, they are free in space, why would they be wavy? So one accepted explanation by botanists and biologists is that actually these complex objects were programmed, were built as a three-dimensional object with this proper shape for their purposes, but it is a three-dimensional object curved. When you see an arc going this way, then the upper part grew faster, the lower part grew slower, then you build a three-dimensional object. It should be probably correlated with the vein structure and with some other breaking symmetry processes. You see these kind of surfaces also in marine snails. You see wavy sheets. Again, when you look at this one, you see that there is a single length, a big length scale, and there is a smaller length scale superimposed on it. It is very common in lichens as well, many, many generations of waviness in lettuce as well, and many other growing natural sheets. So when I think of what made me excited about this project is the fact that I used to be afraid of differential geometry, thinking about all those indexes coming up and down four dimensions. And I was so surprised and happy to see that it is highly related to this very friendly, beautiful surfaces that we see in nature, like those petunia flowers. Okay. I will first describe the experiment. I thought I would have here the overhead, but I will just do it. The experiment is everyone does it every day. Simply take a, yeah, but it won't work. But anyway, I will show the picture. Anyway, every day you open a bread bag or anything, simply take a sheet of plastic and simply tear it like this. That's the entire experiment. But when you look at the edge of the object that was generated, you see that it includes waves upon waves near the edge. I have here some pre-notched plastic sheet, and if you want, you can puff it and tear it. I will tell you, if you don't want to do it, what usually you will find is that in an uncontrolled experiment like that, you will find large scale waviness, smaller and smaller, many, many scales appear on the edge. When you do a control experiment, I will describe it in a second, you find very organized patterns. When the crack, when the tearing propagates in a steady state, you will find two generations of wave one and the small one. You can have three generations of waves, and you can have, in this case, very thin saran wrap, you can find six generations of waves. So you have the big one, it's smaller, smaller, smaller. This is a zoom on this part, and you still see generations upon generations. Another interesting thing is that when you look at this, you see that from the front and also from the side, like the entire three-dimensional shapes that you get from in the plastics is very similar to common shapes of leaves. This is beet leaf. You see very strong similarity, violet and lettuce. And you can ask, is there a deep origin for this similarity? Obviously, I don't want to claim that you tear those leaves and that's why how you generate this waviness, but I think I will show that there is a reasonable connection between these two. So the experiment which I just showed, we do it in a more controlled way. We take a plastic polyethylene sheet, make a notch, and then fix it with parallel bars, and then simply pull it horizontally as good as we can without inducing any out-of-plane loading. We keep the symmetry in the plane. And here we see the crack that propagates to the right. We see the tip, it is smooth, but behind it we see this waviness appears. And these are the dimensions. I don't want to spend too much time on that, but main thing is that we use different thicknesses, and as I will show, it is an important fact. After we finish the tearing, we take the buckle, the wavy sheet, place it on a profilometer, optical profilometer, and actually scan the topography of the buckled surface, and we get this kind of scan. I will call X parallel to the edge, and Y will be perpendicular to X. The original scans that we get are in the coordinates of the lab or of the profilometer, but in order to talk about properties of the sheet at a given distance from the edge, we need to convert Y to be at a fixed distance from the edge, and this is not the coordinate system of the profilometer, because the edge goes forward and outward. We need to integrate the length till the edge. I will show it later. And from these scans, we can get Fourier transform, get amplitudes and wavelength, and what we want. So when we start with looking at the basic edge, simply looking at it, and this is, again, this very thin saran wrap. This is one wavelength, and every time we will zoom on the left shoulder and zoom in a constant factor of, this time it is 3.2, and this is what we see. Again, we zoom on this shoulder and we see this. Again, we zoom, and again we zoom, and we see six generations of roughly similar patterns constructing the edge of the of this sheet. We have fractal scaling for this edge, and I would like to claim that this is unlike many other fractals that we will find in dynamical system. This is an equilibrium of continuum sheet. It's not a transient, it's not an instability because of dynamics. It is the minimum of energy of this sheet, and as I will show, it results from very, very simple reasons. Just focus on this one. You can do it in a more quantified way to show the similarity of those naturally torn plastic sheets. If you plot the amplitude of a wave compared to its wavelength, and you see here that there is a linear dependence over nearly like 2.5 decades.
Power.
Sorry?
Power, linear.
Yes, but it is the power here is one. This is the linear plot. So the power here is one. So we don't break any symmetry in our process, but we get out of plane motion. So one candidate for this behavior is buckling instability. So why do we get buckling? We start with a one-dimensional model. Let's take a strip of thickness T and some length L and apply boundary conditions on it, displacement delta from the sides. This sheet can choose its minimum of energy out of out of all possible configurations. If we constrain the sheet to in-plane deformation, then it's simply a spring, and the energy scales like this with linear dependence on the thickness. If we double the thickness, we will have double energy. But the sheet can do something else. It can bend out of plane, out of the plane, satisfy the boundary condition without any compression in it, simply by keeping the arc length in the center of it constant and stretching the upper one, compressing the lower one. And when you do the integration of the total energy, you find that the energy scales with cubic with the thickness. So when the sheet is thin enough, this factor will be very small compared to this one, and it will prefer this configuration. Like, obviously, if I take this sheet and I press, it will bend. It will not be compressed. But if I will thicken it to a brick size, it will compress. It will not bend. So this is the origin of buckling instability. But on the other hand, here it's very clear. I constrain the sheet, and we know that it will buckle. But this sheet is completely free in space. I don't apply anything on it right now. Still, it is wavy. It is, if I would like to claim it is buckling, it is highly buckled in many generations with high curvatures. And why would it do so without any external constraints? So let's build some quasi-two-dimensional model. We will build our sheet out of elements which have some mismatch in their internal length. So I will make a two-dimensional sheet out of those segments. I will glue this part to that part and try to see what happens then. So one option, staying in the plane, this one will be compressed, this one will be stretched. Again, the energy will scale linearly with the thickness. It's simply double the thickness will double the energy. And that's one configuration. However, if it is thin enough, it can choose some, this is just for visualization, another configuration. This will be nearly flat here, no stretching. And this one will keep its nearly original length by going out of plane, by spontaneously buckling because of this mismatch in internal geometry. So the claim is that some internal mismatch of length can lead to spontaneous buckling. Just for demonstration, I took some rubber bands and made a sheet out of them with some flexible glue. And once I let this sheet to be free and find its shape, this is what we get. So really, you can get spontaneous buckling out of some geometrical mismatch in this two-dimensional sheet. Do we have these conditions in our tearing process, in our plastic sheet? What happened? We start with flat sheet. And here we have visualization of photoelasticity. We shine a polarized light through the sheet and look at it with a cross polarizer. The plastic will, the more the plastic is deformed, the more the polarization vector is rotated. And so here in the middle where there is only air, we see darkness because we look through cross polarizers. But at different places, depending on the deformation, we will rotate the polarization vector and we will find a positive and a negative and positive and negative rotation of the polarization vector. So the thing is that the more deformed the plastic is, or the steeper the deformation is, you will find closer and closer rings of full rotations of the polarization vector. So this is the loaded sample. This is a paper clip for scale. This is the notch. This is the beginning of the propagating crack. And you see that you have a deformation field. Now, if it would be an elastic medium.
This is simply a sheet with a notch?
This is a sheet with a notch. And this
what
is.
What does loaded mean?
On the machine, we just started tearing it. We just started pulling it apart. And the tip just started propagating. This is the propagating tip.
Oh, it's propagating.
It is propagating already. Yes. Yes. But all this part here behind is where I made the original notch. So you don't see. It will be important in the next picture. So we have the formation. Now, if it would be an elastic, purely elastic sheet, when I would unload it and let it relax, I wouldn't see any remains of the formation. It will go and it will all attend this brown color everywhere because it's back to its original passive sheet properties. But when we do so, when we unload the sheet, we see that there is a big deformation zone. There is a zone in which the sheet was deformed because it is plastic in an irreversible way. And the deformation increases towards the edge of the crack. And in the next talks about cracks, we will see that it is a natural thing to explain. Yes? Yes. Here? Yes, it is flat, except this part here, which you see that it is already buckled out. So we would like to measure this irreversible deformation, and to calculate it, we can't hope even to do a reasonable job, so we measure it. This is a propagating tip, and we printed on the plastic some these squares, a grid of squares, and what we see is this. Let's look at this length element here between four dots. Everything is a steady state. This is an important thing to understand, and I would like to emphasize it. When the crack propagates, you will see all this pattern flows steadily without any oscillation, without anything periodic to the tip. Those dots will flow and will attend this distance and flow outward. Everything is steady. So we look at this original length between those dots and put it here. We look at this this length after it was stretched near the singular zone near the tip. And we see that the material had been stretched in an irreversible way in a very big ratio. And as we go out away from the edge, we see that it becomes this deformation becomes smaller and smaller and smaller. So in principle, we have the conditions that we made with those rubber bands, with some mismatch in the internal structure of the sheet. And now we would like to measure this ratio. How much longer is the length element in the x direction from the original one as function of the distance from the edge, a function of y. So we do it in a controlled way. And this is what we get. This is this ratio, Lx, I will call it. Later I will give it f of y, just a different name. And we see that away from the sheet, away from the edge, it is 1. No irreversible deformation had occurred. But as we approach the edge, we see a steeper and steeper and steeper increase in the amount of length that this sheet has. Now, we can simply, in geometrical language, we can say that we started with a flat sheet, and the tearing process built a new metric on this sheet. So if we started with a metric which looks like, well, it's hard, like that. If I want to express a distance between two dots on the surface, I will simply take the square distance is like the x square, the number of dots in the x square plus the number of dots in the y square. This is the length between two dots. Now I have a new metric. Now the distance in the x direction is some function only of the distance y from the edge. It is constant parallel to the edge. It's simply a function which I know that it goes to 1 away from the edge and in a steeper and steeper way goes up to near the edge. Now we would like to make a claim. Take an elastic sheet, put a metric of this kind on it, forget about plasticity, forget about anything. Take an elastic sheet with such a metric, with f, hyperbolic, like steeper and steeper and steeper near the edge, and then you will find those buckling cascades as equilibrium configuration, as minimum of energy of these sheets. To support another claim, this is mapping of different states of the crack with 1 generation, 2 generation, 3 generation, and we see different metric function f of y, which simply express how much length we have, too much additional length we have as function of the distance from the edge. take different profiles, you will get different cascades, different configuration. Now, the importance of this claim is the following. Now it is very clear that all this tearing process is just a tool. It's a tool to take flat sheet and build a new internal geometry within it. If you have a growing sheet, like a leaf or whatever, and the growing process, the growth process will be such that it will build too much length like that, a profile like that, then it will attend this minimum of energy without any additional needs it will build this complexity out of the growth process. So I will go very quickly now. We build an elastic sheet out of many springs connected together with some thickness between them, so we will have bending energy. And the way to introduce the metric f of y is simply by saying that the rest length of the spring in the x direction parallel to the edge increases towards the edge as some function. All the function goes to 1 away from the edge and goes, in this case, to 2 on the edge. So this is an equilibrium of one sheet with an exponential metric, another equilibrium, and another one. And the conclusions from these examples is, first of all, this kind of metric is sufficient to generate those buckling cascades after just as an equilibrium configuration. And different functions will build different cascades. So it's a very powerful tool for plants to use, or for any growing sheet to use if they want to build those shapes. They don't need to program all the pattern. They can simply just have a parameter of growth that will build different shapes. When you look at the simulation and the experiment, they are very similar from the front and from the side. And now questions. Where this complexity comes from? Why would a free sheet with featureless, it's nearly the simplest, except the completely flat metric, but it's nearly the simplest metric you could put on a sheet. Why would it adapt for such a wrinkled pattern as an equilibrium? The other thing we can think about is, what's the application of this? Is it really in use in biology, in growing sheets? So we can make suggestions. I will do this very, very shortly because of time. And the thing is, we would like to say, take this very innocent looking metric, and you will find that there is no smooth embedding of this metric in our Euclidean space, meaning you cannot build a surface which will satisfy all the distances that you specified by your tearing process or by your growth process, and it will still be smooth. I will show briefly why this will be a sufficient demand for complexity to emerge. Then, because of this geometrical limitation, this sheet is actually geometrically constrained. I can take a flat sheet and make pattern very simply by external loading, but here in this case, I don't need the external loading, the external constraint to put on this sheet. Its internal geometry placed in Euclidean space is sufficient to cause this problem of satisfying the metric, and it responds by generating a structure. I hope to spend more time about demonstrating how it is in use in leaves and plants. So very, very briefly, I would like to remind you about the energy functional of thin elastic sheets. It's simply all stretching, but we can split it into two kinds of terms. One linear with the thickness, calling the stretching deformation, and one cubic, which associated with bending. Since T is so small, you can think that you will solve it, that this T square will be an epsilon perturbation for the original just stretching term. And then you say, let's solve this first and then make a perturbation. Solving the stretching term is simply finding the minimum of energy of a stretching, meaning zero stretching, if you find this doesn't work well. Let's find configuration with completely zero stretching, configuration which completely obeys the metric. And this is a geometrical question. then you will have another a question of how to put this perturbation. So first we need to use the geometrical, I will very quickly go on this one. So we specify the distances by a metric, and then we ask what's the shape. The shape is characterized by, at every point we can define principal curvatures, and we can take their product to be the Gaussian curvature. Now, a very beautiful term by Gauss says that the Gaussian curvature is completely determined by the metric, meaning if I really want to look for configuration with zero stretching, I need to look for configuration with specific shape that has a given Gaussian curvature according to the metric which I or the distances which I specified on the sheet. So when we apply this term to our metric of this kind, we find that the Gaussian curvature is simply this very simple thing. And in our case, since we have a positive second derivative, it is negative everywhere. So the tearing process took flat sheet, turned it into a hyperbolic sheet, meaning with a with a negative curvature everywhere. And then we can ask, can you find such a surface? And there are two options. If such a smooth surface exists, then we can add the bending term as perturbation, and we will basically, all the patterns that we see results from the two-dimensional problem, from the stretching problem. But if no such smooth surface exists, then the bending term is a singular perturbation because any solution for the zero stretching configuration has a diverging bending energy. And then we need to solve everything together. And then according to suggestion of Shankar Venkataramani, in this case, you should expect to find multi-scale solution. Now, quickly, I will skip this one. Some supports to the non-embedding scenario. Take your elastic sheet, make simulation with zero thickness. You will find for those smooth metrics, those kind of configuration, highly, highly wrinkled to till the scale of the cell of the simulation. And now I will skip this one, but I would like to spend 2 minutes about showing what this kind, what's the origin of this thing. Let's take the kind of metric we have, which we use in a flat sheet, and put it on a cylinder. So this will be Y, this will be X, and we will put this kind of too much length upward. So if you think about a growing sheet, think about an, you start with a ring of cells, and you have a growth law, which is very, very simple. You add the number of cells increases proportionally to the number of cells you have, an exponential growth of the number of cells which build this cylinder. And you will find that you build a funnel-like shape called pseudosphere if it is pure exponential, but it's not very important. But it is known that this kind of object has a cutoff beyond which geometrically it cannot be extended. Once it reaches the horizon, this growth law tells you that you want to increase the perimeter faster than 2 pi r. That's simply, you want to generate too much length without going outward enough. And this number pi is typical to our space. And once you reach this boundary, you geometrically, you must break the symmetry of this object in order to take care of the length. And then the speculation was beyond this cutoff, we will have this condition for the waviness. In order to demonstrate it, I will describe quickly experiments in gel tubes. Take some environmentally responsive gel like polyacrylamide. Once it is in water environment, it has this volume, this size. Once you put it in acetone environment, it shrinks. So we make a tube like that. We shrink it first, then we dip the edge of it in water, just the edge, let water diffuse inside. Where we have high concentration of water, it will swell. Where we have lower concentration of water, it will stay shrinked. So we build this kind of metric by the ratio between acetone and water. So these are the results of simulations and gel experiment in gel when we made not too much of additional length for the cube. But when we do it, when we do more than that, then this is the result of the simulation, the results in the gel experiment. And very, very similar to what we find in many, many growing tissues like that. So in principle, you can ask, can these beautiful flowers, can they be the result of just a growth process which doesn't break any symmetry? You don't break the symmetry in the thickness direction. You don't break the symmetry parallel to the edge. Take a disk which grows perfectly symmetrically, but just give it an exponential growth or any convex growth profile. It must break the symmetry and choose some length scale and wavelength. And of course, once it broke the symmetry, the conditions along the edge are not identical to the cells. So if the cell's really sensitive to stresses, it will trigger a secondary response and so on. So just to show how we demonstrate this, we take a leaf. Okay, so to demonstrate that it's really in action in leaves, one thing we did is we took eggplants and we said, let's put auxin. But auxin is a growth hormone which increases material production in plants, and it is extensively used in agriculture, but uniformly. But we will do it different. We will put just near the edge. We will put the auxin just on the edge and hope that it will not diffuse too efficiently to the entire plant. So we will end up with high concentration of auxin near the edge and lower inward. Then the leaf will respond by generating too much material near the edge, and we hope to generate this kind of metric. This is the edge. We will have, again, a sheet with hyperbolic metric, and we would like to claim that the leaf will have to attend such wavy shape. And this is from the experiment in eggplants. Again, this is the typical leaves of eggplants where we didn't use any auxin treatment. Here we can see the evolution of the waviness in time, and indeed we see that we can cause a naturally flat leaf to become wavy simply by changing its geometrical properties without breaking symmetry. This is not a very controlled experiment, it's mainly a demonstration, but you can think of doing a proper experiment of this kind. Another thing, take a naturally wavy leaf and ask, do you have the geometrical conditions in this leaf that's similar to the plastic? So this is a ficus leaf, and we marked here by 1, 2, all the numbers, marked the tops and the bottoms of the waviness. And I also marked on the leaf these ups and downs. And now I take scissors and I cut parallel to the edge, strips as thin as I can do, parallel to the edge. And then I flatten them. So this is what we see. This is the edge, and this is the center. First of all, this seems like opposite. If you want to, if you will take a circle and you will cut it, you will have the large arcs outside and the small arcs inside. But this is a typical thing for hyperbolic surfaces. All these lines should be parallel on a surface, and obviously it can be a flat surface that will keep them parallel, and the small arcs will be placed on the large arc from outside. So first thing you see is that really this leaf has an hyperbolic geometry. The other thing to see is that if you take the edge, the strip from the edge with these marks, you see that actually it is nearly perfectly circular. If you think about all those alternative reasons for this ordered waviness, you would think about breaking the symmetry of the growth process by some diffusion or by vein structure or by anything like that. You don't have it here. The leaf actually grew completely without breaking any symmetry. I guess that if such a leaf would be grown in four dimensions, you would find a circular leaf perfectly without any feature. The fact that this kind of leaf is placed in Euclidean in three dimensions forced it to attend this periodic and complex wavy structure. From a recent paper that I saw very recently in Science, they actually did a very, very, very nice work and found, you can ask the question, if all those growth processes naturally will build a curved matrix, why do you have so many flat leaves in nature? And you should ask this question, not the opposite one. And indeed, they found that there is a gene, and once it is knocked off, then leaves become highly deformed and sometimes hyperbolic. And when it is working properly, then it balances the growth distribution, again, without breaking symmetry. Last things we do, we take leaves, we map them with our profilometer, we measure the metric of the leaf, and we can ask the question, take now an elastic sheet, feed it with this specific metric, what minimum of energy equilibrium will you find? Will it be this waviness? If it is, then you show that you really don't need any additional growth mechanism, but too much length. If we will find that those shapes are not the result of this metric, then we can say that, okay, you need something else. Maybe you do break symmetries by the growth process. Just to conclude, in the naturally torn plastic sheets, we saw, first of all, we saw the similarity, we observed the similarity between plants and deformed plastic sheets. We saw that it is built of superposition of similar profiles. I would like to emphasize that different non-self-similar functions, metric functions, will generate other cascades, not necessarily fractal, not perfectly fractal, but with many scales. So the self-similar and the fractal scaling is a specific example. I didn't talk about thickness. All you need is a featureless metric to form these equilibrium configurations. Different metrics will build different cascades. The suggestion is that it results from the non-existence of smooth embedding of those metrics in our space. And then we demonstrated and suggested that some very common complex shapes in nature are the result of this kind of instability. And again, here you don't have scales. Anything that grows and is thin, this thing should be relevant for it. It could be within cells, within everything. Any thin object which is relatively elastic and grows might be affected by this kind of geometrical instability. Thanks.
It was very nice, but 5 minutes too long talk.
Sorry.
I have a simple question. What property of the metric produces self-similar shapes? I didn't understand that.
Okay, I didn't spend too much time about quantifying those profiles and actually showing
right.
what
you said
the scaling.
Sometimes it produces self-similar shapes, sometimes
yes.
it doesn't. Is there a simple criterion on the metric?
Yes. Again, I have to say it carefully, but if you take a parallel-like metric, you will find a self-similar process of buckling.
Like a hyperbola.
Yes, like a...
But any
yes. Definitely, when we take plastic sheets and we hit them with a heat gun and tear them, then we have a different profile of metric, and then you will find a ratio of waves, not like we saw before, like 3.2, but it will be 3, 5, 7, 6, whatever. But still, you need to make more and more and more waves, because I didn't have time to say that. What you actually do, you need to obey some prescribed curvature on the edge. And a single wave, like the funnel, like the shape of the funnel, cannot generate more than 2 pi curvature when you go on in a plane. In order to generate more than that curvature, you need to go out of plane, and then you break the symmetry. And then the question is how you break it. How will you do it? That's a complex question, because then you have to take bending into account. But you know that you must break it. There are no shapes that will generate this curvature without having waviness.
You've shown us how it does, but if you have the metric, it produces buckling, you get the wavy, which is very nice. But I guess, have you tried to see what happens in real life? Because you mentioned the genes, and this is true. Usually you have these kind of things in artificially produced plants, that they knock out the gene or the gene expression is not the right one, the natural one. And usually plants have this opportunity to control it if they have some thing that causes them trouble. Then they change the pattern in order to fight it.
Yes.
If you try to, for example, in order to learn it, I wonder if you try to, for example, to grow something and have different metrics at different places.
So I certainly would like, these are the things I would like to do now. There are certainly plants, and sometimes on the same bush you will find flat leaves and leaves which grow in some other conditions, like in the shed you will find them suddenly wavy. And definitely these are things which are I find them very interesting to study.
They change if you have more vector or less because it helps them to condensate water.
Yes, I guess so.
They should change the gene expression to change the structure.
I guess so. I think it might help increasing surface area. It's also very important, I think, especially in the case of lichens. Lichens have no rods to support them. They don't have any transport mechanism, so they are very, very thin, and still they want to be big. So if they would be flat, they would collapse. One way to make to make such surface stronger is by having like a wavy roof. But then the question, how would you introduce this waviness? So this is a very simple way to introduce this thing if you need it.
This parallel metric from this world singularity, the stress field, your attractive, is it associated with that? Or?
So about the tearing process, the thing is this. You can qualitatively, you can say, OK, the stresses and the time to flow larger as you approach the edge. But I really cannot solve this problem. Instead of trying to solve it, and we had some guesses about what could be the origin, but we decided not to go into that. I mean, it's too complicated. We simply measured it. And since our main purpose was not the tearing process, but the response for some geometry, then we didn't care what's the origin of it. We just measured it and took it as a given thing for this sheet.
But I think it's important because, as you said, you need to have a parallel of that metric to get this fractal pattern instead of just
I definitely find it as a very interesting question. Why is it parallel?
Trying to put plastic interactions into fracture, this is a good test of any such theory, right? Because here you get to predict something and then you can measure in a much easier way.
Yes, you can think really that it will be a probe to measure the deformation profile. Simply measure the ratio of wavelength, and then you will know how it must be then such profile. Yes. So I don't know much about it. I don't know nothing about brain. Buckling and wrinkling happens in many systems, and some very nice works were done very recently about that in like three-dimensional systems. The emphasis here is the fact that it happens in a free thing. Now I know about some works about shrinking gel blocks that done by Tanaka, and he pointed this as a possible origin for a shape of brain, but I don't know much about it. And
it actually, you can do it in 2D sheet, got about a square meter or so of cortex, and you then wrinkle and buckle it down to the size of your head, and that's done in a very constrained manner with a lot of similarity. And so it's probably simpler than 3D blocks.
I see.
Okay.
It sounds certainly interesting.
Okay. Thank you again.
Thank you. Sorry about the time.